Welcome to Drop the Mic with me, Jason Hunt. Today, we're joined by Chris Coverness, also known as Cubby, the digital marketing expert who's revolutionized the way we engage online. As a mastermind behind Cub & Co., Chris's journey from ad agency intern to global influencer has reshaped the digital landscape. Chris talks on stages around the globe around the topic of influence and social media. In this episode, we're going to talk about Chris's rise to a digital marketing powerhouse. We're going to dive into AI and the secrets behind Cub & Co.'s exponential growth. Join us now for a dynamic discussion that cuts to the core of successful digital marketing. Without further ado, let's kick it to my chat with Cubby.
Chris Coverness. I pronounced that right, the last name.
Everybody pronounces it differently, so I'm just happy that you've attempted it. I have no idea what the right answer is. I've heard Coverness, I've heard Coverness, I've heard Coverness, I've heard everything. So I'm just, if you can get in the vicinity, I'm fine.
Chris, I want to give a bit of a frame as to why you're here talking to me on the podcast. And we were rubbing shoulders there in Bucharest, Romania at the AW Summit. The topic you were talking about, monetizing your creativity, was a great topic. It was a great speech. And I definitely think you hit on some nuggets that the audience can take away from this conversation and implement almost immediately. But before that, I think your story is interesting, Chris. You're a Canadian. Would you still call yourself a Canadian?
Absolutely.
Living in Copenhagen?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us the journey, because coming to Canada, I believe you opened up an office in New York as well, and then ventured overseas to Copenhagen. Give us some Coles notes on that journey.
Yeah, basically, I was imported to Denmark by my wife for strategic baby-making purposes. So she's Danish. We met at university, hit it off, thought, okay, maybe this is just some sort of fling, exchange student sort of thing. You know how it goes. Ended up falling in love with her and then did the long distance thing back and forth for, I want to say, 5 years. She was in Copenhagen. I was coming and visiting a few months at a time, then going back to school, finishing my degree, and then getting into work, and then spending holidays there and just back and forth and back and forth. And then we lived together in Toronto for a year, not too far from where you are, actually. You're in Guelph, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm in Toronto for a few years. And then we decide, actually, just about at the financial crisis, at the end, I was in a venture capital company. She had gotten a job with KPMG. So we decided that let's go do Copenhagen because she got a good job there. I didn't have a lot of things tying me to where I was at other than my job. So we moved and I got a job fresh off the boat at an ad agency as an account manager. Basically, account managers, they just client needs, scoping, making sure that we're delivering what we promised, making sure the client's happy. From there, I was promoted to digital director. So I ran the entire digital team that was website building and email marketing. And it was social was around for maybe 3 years. Facebook had just come out of its shell of being more for universities. Now companies were starting to do Facebook pages and things like that. So got involved in some social media campaigns. Did that for a bit, got recruited to another company, spent some time there, got recruited to another company, spent some time there. And then I was about 34 when I was like, I need to start my own company. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep working for somebody else. I really wanted to make my own agency at some point. And I'm sitting there with two kids, a mortgage, two car payments, no savings. And I decided to quit my job. And my wife was like, what the hell are you doing? And I said, it's going to be okay, honey. I'm going to do my own thing. I'll be self-employed. Everything will be fine. Don't worry about it. Luckily, things turned out pretty good. I hustled a lot, got a lot of contracts in, small jobs here and there, built my agency to about 40 people back in 2022. We were about 40 people. Now we're actually scaled back quite a bit. But actually in 2021, opened up in New York. And then this past in 2022 also opened up in Riga, Latvia. So yeah. So now basically I'm just running that agency, social media agency.
I think that's, it's interesting, the starting point, how the launch pad per se, like where you got started and what was the motivation behind it. When you got started out there, was it like 2016, 17?
Around 2016. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. So same. Yeah. So for me, I had that same predicament. I was like, I had the opportunity to work for a digital marketing company downtown Toronto. Paid six figures, or it was like start this own thing and make dog shit. So I still told my wife, she's like, you'll be resentful if you went the way and still continue to work for the man and not went and did your own thing. So I said, okay, good. I'm going to go do my own thing. And she's like, by the way, I'm pregnant with our second. So our second child. So I'm like, oh shit.
Great time.
I'm like, are you sure you don't want me to take the job? She's like, no, you got to go this way. And if I didn't have that pressure on me or my back against the wall or that failure is not an option type of mentality, then my agency wouldn't have gotten where we got to today by any means. You almost need that, right? You need that kind of drive or that fire under your ass to get going.
Absolutely. I think that's a good lesson for anybody who wants to start something. It's like, when your backup is against the wall, you have to survive. You have to succeed. So you just make it happen no matter what. And I think a lot of people talk about safety nets and there's no such thing. There's no such good time. It's either now or never. So just buck up and do it. And having that little motivation, that extra, holy shit, if this doesn't work, I'm screwed. Having that, can help you. So
100%. And you know what? I will give some credit back in 2016-17 to Gary Vaynerchuk because he instilled that whole hustle culture back in the day. Like, why are you sitting there watching Sopranos when you could be working on your business and making money? Obviously, that's taken an interesting turn. I don't think that's even a thing anymore, hustle culture.
It's an interesting thing that you bring up. I think that it ebbs and it flows. And I think that right now, obviously during COVID as well, there's been a realignment of values and what we consider to be valuable work, what we think is invaluable work. And I think Gary's definitely has his fingerprint all over the digital marketing space and all over the entrepreneurship space. You can't discount that. And I do think some of his tenets or some of his teachings very much hold up. But at the same token, I don't want to say a victim because that's not the right word, but I was definitely involved in that hustle culture and definitely espoused it and definitely pushed for it. And I can honestly say that I don't think it put me in the hospital, but I've had my own health issues the last few years. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. I don't know if you know anything about that, but basically they had to remove some of my intestine. I had an ostomy bag for a year and then they put me back together and now I'm on permanent medication for the rest of my life. Now, did hustle culture create that or no? But it definitely exacerbates it. It definitely contributes to my overall health, right? So I would say there's a balance, pushing yourself, knowing what you can handle, and then also making sure that you're taking care of yourself and making sure that you're not sacrificing everything for something small. You got to really sacrifice if it means something. Yeah, it's an interesting balance and I have a different approach now. The hustle definitely helped me back then though.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting to hear that story and understanding the drive behind somebody hustling. Are you battling against yourself when you're in that kind of hustle mode or that sort of mindset of keep going and going to the point of burnout? Or is it fear of competition? Like wondering, oh, well, I'm going to go to bed early tonight, but my competition's still working. So I should probably stay up a couple extra hours. You know?
Yeah, it's a combination, right? I think we're all just trying to prove ourselves. We all have a little bit of self-doubt despite the bravado or the confidence that we might exude. All of us have our own insecurities. And I think definitely those insecurities can be an advantage and you can use those to push through, but sometimes they can hurt you as well. So you have to just be aware, I think, is the key ingredient here. So you just have to know when is this detrimental and when is this helping me and be able to tap into both. And I think that comes as you get more mature, as you become a more experienced business owner, you figure out, oh, okay, that needs to tone down, that needs to come up. How do I use these things to my advantage and not my disadvantage?
At what point did you take your foot off of the gas? Was it to the point where you got sick and you're like, man, I really got to pull back? Or was it before that?
No, it was definitely that caused a lot of it. I think it also helps when you start to add on team members. I got to really hand it to the group around me. They started taking things off. And I would say that to my own humble brag here, if you want to call it that, like I hired good people. And I wanted to purposely hire people in areas that I thought I suck at, or I thought I don't need to do that. For example, a CFO managing the finances for the first 5 years of the company, I was managing the entire finance and doing account management and doing a little bit of creative direction and, right, you do as a business owner. And that just didn't make sense. Like at some point you got to go, all right, I need somebody to take this to the next level. I need to take this off my shoulders so I can do something else. Same with the operation side, somebody finding my chief operating officer, fantastic at running the ops of the company, project management, contracts, the whole flow of the agency, that's all in her hands. And it's just amazing that I have these people. And I think for any business owner, you really have to look at those things and go, should this be with somebody else? Can I afford this? Maybe it's a part-time person, even maybe it's a contractor, but should I be doing this? Is it causing me more hours? Can I be spending in a different place? Is it detrimental to my health even just doing this one part of the job? So that's really what happened to me. I was able to fulfill those roles. And then, yeah, I slowed down definitely after I was diagnosed, because I was in the hospital also for, I think in the hospital total, the last 2 years I've been in there for 2.5, 3 months. In and out.
Wow.
That causes you to, that you have to slow down. Like you have no other choice.
I think that is, it's such a good point that the importance of finding the right pieces to the puzzle in terms of whether it's a business partner, whether it's a director of operations, that person that offsets everything that you maybe shouldn't be focused on. I think that's like your director of operations essentially is probably your savior in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And like everybody we do as well, like hey, that we put on the team, it's if they're not contributing to making the ship either point in the right direction or go faster, then you don't need them. Like, so you just have to be very careful also that you don't, I'll tell you what, we scaled back quite a bit over the last 18 months. We were up at 40 people just after COVID, a little bit of COVID hiring there that also got us, because during COVID, everybody switched their budgets to social media, right? They weren't doing events. They weren't doing billboards. They weren't doing television ads. They were doing social media. Our budgets just went through the roof. And as a result, we also hired a lot of team. We also hired maybe people that weren't essential, things that we should have maybe hired out, contracted out, instead of bringing in full team members for. So we grew a lot during COVID. And then after COVID, as budgets then switched, we're left with, whoa, we're not the right size anymore. We have to scale back and figure out what's a good size for us now. So now we're back down to, actually, we'll be 21 people come August 1st, I think, because there's some people that are, their contract is ending or their paternity sort of contract is ending, paternity cover and stuff like that. So I think it's August 1st. We're at 21 people, and that's a good size. And we got rid of some of the non-essentials.
21, is that 21 in office in Copenhagen?
No, we got a couple in Latvia. We got a couple in the US, and then the rest are in Denmark.
Very good. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Switching lanes here for a second. I want to talk about the topic that you dove into in Bucharest there at the AW Summit, and that's monetizing your creativity. Excellent topic. I think it's very much geared towards any entrepreneur out there, essentially, that wants to find a way to monetize their creativity. How can somebody leverage their talents to generate that additional income stream?
Yeah, it's a good, we're sitting here and it's a good example of monetizing creativity or monetizing maybe an audience, if you want to even go that far with it. But the thing is that you cannot, it's really hard to escape being a creator nowadays. If you're a business owner or you're a business or you're an entrepreneur, the leverage back in the day used to be, hey, if you could find resources like oil and gas, that was your leverage. If you could find, and then it became leveraging money in the banking industry. And then that's still the case now, but that was the big thing. And then can you leverage people? Can you leverage great amounts of staff? And then the internet revolution said, could you leverage data and leverage code? And now it's like everybody's leveraging audience. Audience is the golden ticket right now. And you see this across so many facets of business and so many things like Prime energy drinks and anything that Mr. Beast is doing and anything like mentioning Gary Vee. Like he's built a $200 million in revenue agency in 10 years or 12 years. And it's largely due to audience. It's largely due to monetizing the creative content that you're creating. And it can be done in many different ways. It can be done like we're doing right now with a podcast and then getting guests on. Those guests maybe introduce you to others that you can work with and through business partnerships, or they become a client of yours. That's been successful for us at the agency, running our Social Media Sucks podcast, having guests on, and then the guest sees what we do and what we're into. And then they're like, hey, you guys should do some social content for us. Great. Let's talk. So that's also one way to monetize it. And then there's tons of others like YouTube and TikTok and brand deals and affiliate marketing and websites and traffic and just there's an infinite number, merchandise, for example, or any of those things. There's just so many facets to actually monetizing this. And some are short term. I can have an affiliate link on my website and clicks in and I get that affiliate, that cash back or that discount or whatever I get. Some are more long term, like you've built an audience for a podcast and then business comes from that. It's just what you want to do and how you want to do it.
Yeah, I think a lot of listeners might be sitting there wondering, okay, yeah, there's all these different ways to create content, monetize content, but my followers are stuck at 200 or 300 and I can't surpass that no matter how much content I put out there. You've obviously amassed a large following for yourself. The Gary V's have amassed large followings for themselves. What would you say are some of the biggest needle movers in moving that follower base north?
Yeah, I think that this is an interesting topic, right? Because there's sort of two sides of the coin, or there's a different. I think definitely I was right place, right time. I would say that I got lucky in lots of ways. Being new on a platform, for example, Snapchat, when it was coming up, that's where I made my biggest moves. Like I had 200,000 followers on, and they weren't even called followers, right? On Snapchat. And the only way that you could figure it out was through like proprietary analytics software that came in much later. So it was a bit of a weird sort of way to get your data. But that I was lucky. I was early on a platform that did well, that exploded. And from there, I became a sought after voice on Snapchat. And similar things that we've seen for YouTubers and similar things that we've seen for TikTok. And now maybe Threads is another opportunity, right? For those of you listening, like to get in early on a platform, on a new way of doing things is going to be some of the secret sauce for sure. And that certainly helped me. And then on top of that, I was talking about how to do Instagram and how way before anybody else. Like the saturation now in the marketplace is much, much bigger. Like there's thousands and thousands of people talking about hacks on Instagram and how to create content. 6, 7, 8 years ago, it wasn't that many. And so I would say I was just in the right place at the right time. And then you can see that to reach a wider audience, most of us have had to start thinking about, okay, being a little bit wider. Like now I'm going to talk about maybe entrepreneurship, or maybe I'm going to talk about health, or maybe I'm going to talk about stress, or maybe I'm going to talk about how to live a good, happy life. And you can see this also with a lot of creators' content, how they go from a very niche sort of area and then they have to expand out to get to broader topics because those broader topics are where the bigger audiences are. But I will say this, I don't know if the large influencer game is still available. I don't know if I think that we're seeing creators with 10,000 followers that are really niche in woodworking or in how to, I'm renovating some of my house here, like what drill to buy or what tools are the best. Like, so we're seeing, and TikTok is like the proponent of this or the gateway of this, because there's been so many micro influencers, creators that have just popped up and we're not really following them as personal brands anymore. There's just so much. So like the personal branding aspect is melting away. And now it's really about, can you deliver really good content that is hooking me, that gives me everything I need in less than a minute? And that's what's driving the follower growth right now. is these more micro influencers.
This episode is brought to you by Cuppa. Are you spending a lot of time optimizing the content for your website? Wait no more. Build optimized content in minutes. You can start driving traffic to your site in less time than it takes to brew your morning coffee. Over 1 million articles have been generated with a 95% satisfaction rate. Cuppa is trusted by builders, agencies, and content teams across the globe. Start your free trial today. Go to cuppa.sh. That's cuppa.sh. Use the code SAVE50 to receive a $50 credit.
A lot of these social media platforms like TikTok and Reels are leaning in heavy on the search optimization of those platforms. Like for myself this morning, I was thinking, oh, I want to get a guacamole recipe. So yeah. Typically I would first go to Google and have to scroll past the SEO optimized content and pop-ups and banners and all that to get to the juice, to get to the info I really wanted. And then I started using ChatGPT for that, which is good as well for recipes. It was awesome. But I'm a visual guy. And what was even better is going to my TikTok search bar and typing in guacamole recipe. And to your point, there's clusters of content around guacamole recipes. And I sat there, watched the first couple, found one I liked. I couldn't tell you who the user was, who the brand was.
You wouldn't remember their name.
Don't care, right? So I got what I wanted, right? And I got my answer quick. And then I moved on to whatever I was doing. So absolutely, I think that's a very good point that you bring up about the big influencer game is on its demise.
Yeah, at least for some certain categories. And I would say there's always going to be the famous, really hot Instagram model or the Kardashian or the famous person. Like there's always going to be those aspects of it, and that's fine. But I think the building a million person following for X, Y, and Z is just not there anymore. I think that, and it's not necessarily where the brand deals are, and it's not necessarily where the good content's coming from either. And it's not, like you said, it's not SEO optimized. It's driven by personality and not necessarily driven by utility. And I think that's where we're seeing this switch. Is it used to be a lot about personality, and it still is, don't get me wrong, like entertainment. The most entertaining guacamole recipe is probably the one that's winning. But it's also about the utility of it. Is it any good information? Because it doesn't matter how entertaining it is. If that guacamole recipe sucks, then it's probably not going to gain a massive amount of traction. It's probably going to die. So it has to be both. It has to be extremely valuable, full of utility, and also entertaining and somewhat spiced up.
Okay, that's a really good point, because now we're in a position now with content being so saturated. So it's more important now than ever to have that utility aspect to the content that you create. Does that mean that each piece of content you create requires more planning? What are some tips to get that content standing out amongst the competition?
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic that I'm like deep in at the moment, because I'm very aware that the game has changed, and I'm very aware that what used to create fairly decent videos and content that hooked a reader or hooked a viewer is changed completely. And what people want and what people expect is changed. The hook is extremely important. Working on the first visuals, the first 10 seconds is extremely important. How do you stand out in that sea of content? Like you said, it's so saturated. So there's a lot more research that goes into, okay, what is the playing field here? Who am I up against? What are all the, if I'm going to do something here about finding out, first of all, what are people searching? Maybe using Answer the Public or your own insights or looking at the comments of certain videos, like what are people talking about? Okay, that person says, yeah, but what about this? Okay, or someone's, maybe you're in the fitness industry and you go to one of the main big fitness videos and people are asking, hey, do you have a better exercise for biceps or whatever it is? Taking that insight and then boiling that down to, okay, what information can I do that's different than everybody else or stands out? What is the first 10 seconds? What is the hook into this? So understanding human psychology extremely well, and really, I would say workshopping those hooks is really important. So thinking, okay, I'm going to write 10, 15 hooks into this, see which one I like better, maybe even pass it by a few people. Hey, which one of these do you think like really grabs you? Those things really matter. And then I would say people are also, because of the saturation, you need to provide some social proof. What we're seeing in these videos now is like people saying the hook, and they're saying why you should actually listen to them about this topic. So I'm a fitness instructor. I won this gold medal, or I won this, or I own this own studio, like whatever those things are, so that people know, okay, this is legit. I should keep watching, because our bullshit meter is on high alert on these viral videos, because we've seen so many that are just like, this person actually have any authority to talk on this topic? So we're seeing this sort of hook, and then social proof. And then we're getting into the brunt of the content. Usually there's also a mix of a little bit of what I call enemy marketing, which is the pushback on norms or what you've seen others do. So you'll say, okay, I'm going to show you that this is a guacamole recipe that I got from my grandma, my Mexican grandma, who swore by it. It was at every family dinner, and it was the best thing. Everyone talked about it. And then go into, hey, I'm a personal chef. I've been doing this for 10 years and blah, 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 blah. And then here's what I'm going to show you. Now, people might tell you that you need to do this part of your guacamole first, or that part. That's all bullshit. You got to start here. So that enemy marketing aspect, that combativeness, that against the rules, against the norm, is also what we're seeing a lot in these types of content now. And then you're obviously giving the value, making it nice, interesting, changing the visuals. Maybe doesn't have to be like snappy. People often say that, hey, it's got to be really fast moving and stuff. No, that's not a hard and fast rule. We've seen lots of slow content that is one shot, top down, just really explained really nicely. And then, then you wrap it up with a call to action. If you like these, I do tips like this every day on different food, Mexican food. Come back for more. And then you just leave it at that.
Mic drop points right there. I think it's so important. Enemy marketing is prevalent. You see it all the time now. And I think the key is what people need to do is become disruptive in those first 3 seconds, or disruptive in the hook to capture the attention. Because you got to think, a lot of people just create the ads without thinking what other ads are being served to that user as well. Because if they're showing any intent with the service that you offer, good chance they're inundated with all your competitors' content. So It's almost like going to that page transparency on their Facebook page, looking at the ads that they're running, and how can you differentiate yourself from them?
Yeah. And that's on the ad side. It's much easier on the ad side too. It's just, you have to know your niche. You have to really go into it and say, okay, how can I stand out in this sea, and do some searching and do some digging and understand what things are working and what aren't working, what isn't working. It's a bit anthropological these days. Like, it's really going deep. And we try to do this at the agency on a daily basis. Like, why is this working? And why is this over here not working? And really pulling it apart. And I think that's one of the, you're seeing this almost, this skill set develop in almost everybody these days. Like, even soccer moms that are showing their latest baking tips, or a little bit, maybe I'm being a little too sexist here with moms and baking tips. Maybe it's a soccer mom showing how she lifts 40 pounds of weight overhead. I don't know.
But I've never seen that content, but I've seen a lot of the other content.
You've seen a lot of the other content, or actually, speaking of reno, my wife does a lot of the reno around here too. Like, we've seen a lot of carpenter women doing a lot of stuff. But my point is, like, they are building a skill set of content creators. They are becoming social media experts. And it's wild to see that. Like, they have no job in this category, but they're building those skill sets. And I think it's scary, but it's also a little bit exciting as well, right? That people have started to take on this job without it actually being a job.
Do you run any ads for your own agency to generate some inbound leads?
Yes, we do. Currently, we've paused everything, but usually we do. We use a lot of LinkedIn ads. We've used a lot of Google search ads in the past. We don't run a lot of Facebook at the moment. We don't run a lot of Instagram at the moment, but those things are going to change here in 2 months' time. We're launching a new website, launching a new brand, trying to mix up the message. Because I'll tell you what, this is where I did the classical mistake, and I think a lot of businesses can recognize this. And it's something we often tell our clients as well. Like, don't turn off marketing. Like, just keep investing in marketing. I know times are tough, a little bit of recession, a little bit of issues here and there. Don't turn off your marketing. We didn't hear that advice at all. As the coming out of 2022, I just recognized, holy shit, we're spending more money than we have. We better slow it down on certain areas, cut some costs. Employees were one of those things. And then also marketing. So it's, we didn't take our own medicine. And then we can see that it actually affects it. So if anybody wants to have the definitive answer, turn off your marketing for a little while and see what happens. Because I guarantee you'll be sitting in the same place that I am saying, wait a second, we don't have enough leads. We don't have enough pipeline. Sales isn't as efficient as it was. What are we doing wrong? Oh, it's because we turned off marketing. Let's put it back on. And I'm not maybe like marketing, but advertising, I would say. Like, we're still marketing. We're still doing some events. We're still posting organically. But when we turn off advertising, we can definitely see an impact on the business. So it's a very good lesson to learn.
Yeah, we definitely scaled back as well over the last year, but never turned it completely off, right? Like this podcast, the podcast that we're running continuously, we have this content and it's just clips, collecting video views, right? Because when we're ready to turn on that tap full on for lead generation, we have this seasoned audience that's just already knows our name and they're warm, right? And that's essentially what we like to use Facebook, Instagram, Meta for. It's just to warm up an audience because somebody could be listening to this conversation and they get to know us, they might like us, and 6 months down the road, they become a client. And that's one of those intangibles that you can just never really test the ROI to or attribute the ROI to, is like understanding who's listening to your podcast or who's watching your content and then taking that action down the road. A lot of businesses have a tough time understanding the importance of that top of funnel. It's just, I just want leads. I'm a real estate agent. Just get me leads. I want leads. That's all I care about. It's okay. Yeah. This is why you're going to complain to me in 3 months being like, Facebook leads are shit.
Yeah, because it's a funnel for a reason. If you scrape the bottom of the barrel and there's no more leads at the bottom of the barrel, because that's what basically lower funnel activity is, if you're not putting more at the top, eventually you run out, or eventually they're no good, or eventually it costs you more than it should because you haven't done a good enough job warming them up, putting them in the top of the funnel. That's how it works. If there's nothing coming in, there's nothing coming out. So I think that's it's a very good point. And as much as organic, I love organic content. I definitely am a cheerleader for it. There is something about being able to definitely reach your audience, definitely amplify your message through paid media when you need it to work indefinitely. Like when you don't like, and also we also tell our clients like 60-40 split. 60% of your money should go to building the content. 40% should go to distributing that. Now, whether or not that 40 is a mix of organic and paid, that's up to you. But definitely 60-40 is a really good split. And that's you, because you need distribution. And it's not helping that Facebook, Instagram, even TikTok, even LinkedIn, all these places, if you're a company, they want you to pay. So you can fight that as much as you want, or you can say, all right, I understand. I want access to this audience. I'm willing to pay the very cheap price when you really look at it, because there's no other cheaper medium in this game. It's really highly efficient and really cheap compared to paying for a one-time billboard to sit on the side of the road that you don't even know if your prospects are driving past.
So when you say 60-40, you mean 60% of the bandwidth to create that content and 40% of the budget to distribute it? Is that what you're looking at? Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha. Okay.
And many people would play with that and say, well, maybe it should be 80-20 or maybe, but oftentimes you see brands go the other way. They'll go, you know, 80-20 where it's 80% of the media budget, 20% content and creativity. And then you're like, this is not, there's a reason why it's costing so much to get these leads.
Yeah.
Because your ratios are off.
So that's a good, actually, that's interesting. So yeah, how much emphasis do you put on the quality of content being churned out there? Is quality super important for you, or is throwing out ugly ads out there as well, is that something you might throw into the mix just to test?
I think that I wouldn't say it's ugly is a, a different word I wouldn't use, but I would definitely use, we're seeing more UGC style things that are done by the phone, more I would call what you'd call authentic content, content that is innocuous, content that doesn't look like an ad. That's what is operating. And you could even say even like an image picture, but the text is written like it was produced in Instagram stories or produced with available design tools that you have on your phone versus a more traditional ad that you'd see in a newspaper or highly designed. We're seeing those things do much better than the super design stuff. Unless the super design stuff is designed to be that so creatively juicy that you go, whoa, this is next level. This is something else. You can't really be in the middle. I think that's where the problem starts, is if you're in the middle, you're just wallpaper. Nobody sees you. So it's either super creative or low end. Mm-hmm. I think the middle is where we have a problem right now. And maybe that gets fixed. I don't know, but I'm just finding that those are the two areas you play, either in meme country or in like super produced country, and trying to find that what works for you, or doing a mix of the two, is really an interesting creative test.
I think the point is the users now are very savvy and they can sniff a sponsored ad a mile away, and you're just trying to separate yourself from the wallpaper, right? It's funny. Last night, myself and one of my colleagues created an ad. We're trying to drive traffic to a survey. Okay. And we're trying to come up with the copy for the ad. So we're sitting there in the boardroom, just shooting the shit about it, cracking some jokes. And he's like, hold on a second. He puts out his camera. He records us just coming up with the copy for the ad that we're doing for this campaign. And short minute and a half clip, we're like, perfect. Do it through Descript, put the captions on it, and just do it out there. But it's literally us sitting there just trying to spitball the copy of the actual ad that we're putting out there and with the actual copy on it. And it's just got this comment like where I'm talking about adding emojis and, oh, more sirens. We need more sirens.
And that's brilliant. That's so nice that you break in the fourth wall in the creation of the ad. That's the kind of stuff that people will enjoy to watch and enjoy to be a part of. And they won't necessarily love to be a part of some super glossy something or other, right? They don't feel like they're a fly on the wall. They don't feel like they're a part of your brand. They don't feel like they're a part of the joke. They're not in on the joke. So I think that's where you've done that's a brilliant idea. Like, it's just, it's amazing.
It's funny because I think a lot of entrepreneurs fall into this trap too, and marketing agencies. It's like they look at an ad, it's like, oh, that's going to crush it. That's a really good ad. I think that's going to be awesome. But it doesn't matter. What matters is the data, right? So, you know, we're just doing this test to throw it out there and be like, let's see what the data spits back and if it actually works.
Yeah. And I never argue with people anymore about whether something's going to work or not. I just say, we can find out and 10 hours.
Yeah.
We'll run these both ads. We don't need to debate. Like, I'm not going to argue with you whether or not the button should be blue or green. We can find out today. Mm. Like, that's the place that we're at. And until marketers switch their mindset to understanding that we have the greatest sandboxes in the world at our disposal, there's no sense in sitting here debating things anymore, because we can go find out. And cheaply, like content, I also tell the ideation and the creativity to find out what should we do is the variable, is the place where you should spend your time. The production of it is nothing. If we look at AI tools and we look at where things are going from a global content creation standpoint, like, you can pop this video that we got right now into an AI tool that'll spit out the best 20, 30 second clips, give you 10 clips, all with subtitles, and it does it in less than an hour. Mm-hmm. When you used to pay an editor $500 to do that. And it's like, okay, then the production is not where the money is being spent now. It's not where the time is being spent. It's actually in the creative ideas, right? So let's come up with the ideas, spit out as much production as we can on it in the short time that we have and the short money that we have. And then let's go test. Let's go see. And then you'll know in 24 hours which one is the best one.
How are you using AI right now in your agency?
Too much. I think we've signed up for too many tools. I got to scale it back a bit. It's all over the place, but we're using it across the board for obviously image generation. We've been playing with it for video generation as well. We've been using it for text. We've been using it for production, cutting content, subtitling content, iterations, like asking it to spit out 5 versions of this one ad. I think that it's a mixed bag. Some is really great. Some needs some tweaking. I think that spending your time to figure out how to prompt AI tools the proper way is a fun job in itself. I think I've found a little bit of the secret sauce lately. I've been really, it's that 60-40 thing again. I'm spending 60% of my time figuring out the perfect prompt and 40% getting it and then reviewing it and tweaking it. So I think that's where things are interesting, is really just playing with those prompts and feeding it as much data as possible first and foremost, trying to get unique content out of those things and not just bullshit in some ways.
The bot is always just trying to learn. And it's a matter of feeding that bot more information instead of just shoot me a blog post about top 5 social media trends of 2023.
Yeah, exactly. And I try to think of what I did is I studied a little bit of creative writing and I thought, okay, if I was going to teach a bot how to creative write, what things would it need to know? Because it can write. Writing is, anybody can write the inspirational quote about motivation. If you wanted to add a layer of creativity to it, you got to understand what is creative. Creative is metaphors and similes and poetic and cultural references and references to imagery and references to auditory things. And once you start to teach an AI to use those elements and also lay in a tone of voice as well, teach it a tone of voice, then you're in some good places. So I'm really happy with some of the content that we're getting out of it lately by taking a creative writing approach to it and then also laying on that tone of voice. So training it like, this is the tone of voice. It is whatever it might be. Is it rebellious? Is it dark humor? Is it inspirational mixed with whatever it might be, hippie? Like, how do you really get to that nuanced tone of voice that's specific for your brand, specific for what you're trying to do? That's gold nowadays. So I really want to drop that tip to everybody. Spend some time training an AI on the tone of voice and the creative writing, and you'll find that it just goes way, way better.
Awesome. Love it. Chris, this has been great. If our audience has any questions for you, how can they get in touch? And also, what are your socials?
Yeah, absolutely. DM me. I'd love to know that you heard the episode and what you thought of it. So just find me on Instagram. Instagram.com/ChrisCubby, Chris Cubby on Twitter, which is ChrisCubby. I'm Chris Cubby everywhere. YouTube, you can search Chris Cubby on LinkedIn, just wherever you like to spend your time. I'm usually there unless you're on OnlyFans or you're on Threads.
You're not on OnlyFans yet?
No, not yet, man. I don't know. I don't have any reason yet.
Yeah,
pornography is free. I don't know if anybody knows this. Maybe I'm dropping a mic here, but I don't understand this whole paying for this thing. I don't get it. But you can't find me there. But you can find me on Threads. Even I just got up on Threads, so you can find me basically everywhere.
Cool. Any stages you're going to be on anytime soon?
Yeah, I got two in Copenhagen actually, back to back, November, nice. December, and then I've got nothing else booked. Actually, so I'm almost done. I don't know if anything else is going to come in, but November, December is it. So what about you?
Yeah, no, probably in the fall, be heading back over to Europe, try to parlay as many shows as I can while I'm over there. It's a long haul from this side of the ocean. So try to make the most of it. So
good idea. We'll see.
Yeah, definitely. But Chris, thanks a lot. And thanks to you. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, thank you for checking out this episode of Drop the Mic with Cubby. If you saw value in this conversation, please head on over and leave us a review. Also, while you're over there, hit that subscribe button as well so you don't miss any of the outstanding upcoming episodes that we have lined up for you. The influencers coming onto this show have been embedded in the digital marketing space for quite a while. And one of the reasons why I created this podcast was to give you the insights into what transformed them from just the regular Joe marketer to the influencer and powerhouse marketer they become today. So I'd love to hear what you think. Please do reach out. Follow me on your socials, Jay Hunt Official. That's JayHuntOfficial. Catch you next time.